There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society sometimes makes us feel ashamed of. My name is Caroline, and I'm sexy, I'm cute, I'm popular to boot, and she's bitchin', great hair, the boys all love to stare, it's Tessa Coates!
Oh my god, I'm shaking with excitement. Oh, I didn't know that was coming and I really loved it.
Do you want to be introduced by a peppy rhyme? Whenever you're brought on to something, any talk, any panel... Just there should be a little cheer just for you.
Well, 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 Whitney. Torrance. You kick it, Torrance. And I'm big red. Oh, Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia. This is a spicy meatball today.
Oh, gosh.
Bring it on. The first movie. Mm-hmm. All of the other movies are available readily for streaming.
Are they really?
But Bring It On, for some reason, has become very difficult to find. It's been stripped from all the streaming platforms. People message me. I will send you the illegal download link. I will feel not bad about it because they have made it difficult to find. But very demanded on this podcast. And
is it really?
Yeah, it really is. People do be coming for the Bring It On. And something that had a profound effect on you, Tessa Coates.
It absolutely did. I can't believe you can find the others. The six, do you mean the other Bring It Ons?
Yeah. They desperately want you to watch the other Bring It On
Where
movies.
Where are they?
They're all over Netflix. They're all over Amazon.
Stop it.
You can watch them. They're flinging those at you.
Because they're made by the same production company. So I cannot believe that they aren't.
I don't understand the vagaries of streaming laws.
Oh, Beacon Pictures, get your act together. If I may just say what the sequels are called. Bring It On Again. Bring It On All or Nothing. Bring It On In It to Win It. Bring It On Fight to the Finish. Bring It On Worldwide Cheer Smackdown.
Wow.
And then the made-for-TV film where they pivot.
Those other movies were made for theatres?
That's correct. No, they were directed, but this one was a TV film. I don't know what the distinction is there. Please do write in. I won't mind. And they pivot now into horror. Bring It On
what?
Cheer or Die. Yeah, 2022.
Mother of God.
So I haven't seen Cheer or Die, but I have seen all the others.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
they are atrocious. And not even like yum, 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 trash, trash, trash. Atrocious. Oh, I thought we were in trouble.
Yeah,
not fun, atrocious. Truly
just,
atrocious.
Just poor.
Just so poor. Just
right.
Almost unwatchable.
And so when you watch those unwatchable films, what feeling are you trying to capture? What are you trying to do to your brain that brings you back to the year 2000?
Okay. I cannot actually find in my mind the first time I watched Bring It On. I have no recollection of it. Mm-hmm. But from that moment to this, every moment of my life, every piece of my work, every aspect of my pursuit into performance and storytelling and wanting to create things, every single moment is chasing the feeling of the beat dropping when they go to see the Clovers for the first time and they go and the noise goes. Now, unfortunately, as will become apparent through this podcast, I cannot sing and I cannot make any kind of musical rhythm or beat. So when you're like, what the fuck is that? Like, please, can you add it in or will you be in licensing trouble?
Oh, that's kind of, I don't know.
Okay, so if it does work, here it comes. And then they do this action.
Yeah, they arms up. Yeah.
And then they go and oh my God. And they're beating the on the floor of the gym. And you're like, it's electric.
It is electric.
Electric.
And the thing is, you've been impressed up until that point. You're so ready to believe because the entire film begins with almost like this Shakespearean prologue of like who we are, where we are. These are the Toros. Here's all the characters. And like, you know, with the chant I just did at the beginning.
Yeah, now here they all are. And now I pass the torch. This is the captain for the first time.
Yeah.
I'm retiring. The whole thing.
Exactly. And like, we're already impressed by that. We're already in. We already know all of the stakes of the film 2 minutes in. We watch them do their thing. We're astounded by their athleticism. It's all this very clean, white, Californian. Mm-hmm. It's very a predecessor to like the OC, I think, and One Tree Hill. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, like, definitely One Tree Hill was like cribbing off of that. That the everyone's house is massive. Like,
oh gosh, yes.
In a way that in other Californian high school movies feels like, oh yeah, everyone in the world is just rich and that's just how it is.
Mm.
But in Bring It On, it's very deliberate because it is about class and race boundaries and mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. and appropriation and all these very complicated things that are portrayed in this incredibly entertaining way. So you already believe these are the best athletes in their field.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time you go into that gym to see the Clovers, they just leave them in the dust.
It's the first, you're, it's, gosh. Gosh. That's exactly it. Because up until that point in the movie, you've been content. You're watching and there's not any other doubt in your mind. So they're shaking the table with enthusiasm. But like, you aren't thinking, oh, when's the twist happening? Or when are we going to up the stakes or anything? You're like, yep, this is a cheerleading movie.
Yeah.
They've lost someone. They have to bring this girl in. It's going to be about
She's struggling. She's anxious. Yeah.
We're bringing this outsider.
There's a new girl.
Yeah.
She's rich too.
She's rich too. Yeah, the whole thing. Like, you're like, yeah, this is the story. And then when we drive to Compton and we see the Clovers, it blows the whole thing wide open. And also those girls are so much better, like breathtakingly better than the Toros. Like, leaves them so embarrassingly standing behind. And it's bringing this level of like of passion and skill and they're feeling it in their soul in the way that the Toros are just like going through the motions because they're hot girls and they're going to be fine for the rest of their lives. Yeah. Like, this is something like, oh my goodness.
It's something deeper. It's something, it's like, because the Clovers are not getting trophies for this or accolades for this because, as we learn later in the film, they don't have the resources to enter these competitions that the Toros are. It's like they're doing it for their team. They're doing it for their community, for the people around them. And it makes it like, it's just in the performance. Like the, oh God, I'm very, very excited. Very moved. It's just in their every movement, they're doing it and they mean it.
Mm.
Which, and like, you didn't even realize the Toros didn't mean it beforehand.
You didn't know. That's the thing. Yeah. You didn't know up until that point. It has not been like, this is a shitty team of white girls. You haven't set that premise out at all.
No.
You're just like, we're following them on their journey to nationals. Will they make it? You know, we're in as well.
Because she already has enough obstacles before the Clovers even show up.
There are already obstacles. We've got this crappy boyfriend. We've got this stuff. We've got the, you know, the part of the team hate her.
Yeah.
You know, we've lost a girl on day one trying to do the illegal wolf wall pyramid. You know, it's all go already. And I think that's part of its magic is that, you know, it has this 1 foot in or outside the door, in, you know, it's the don't hate us because we're beautiful because we don't like you either. Like, it's already gently pushing at the edge of like what a cheerleader is and be like, we're hot, but I'd be like, but you're like, but that isn't what it's about. And then, oh my,
but it's like, it's so, because okay, this movie, I'll be honest with you, never thought about it really. And if I did think about it, I probably had seen it at a couple of sleepovers, but my main association was the girls in my school who were just kind of dicks.
Okay.
Really loved it. Like, I don't mean popular girls, I mean dicks, you know, just like, they were all the sort of, it was like those same girls. I remember when Mean Girls came out a few years later, they missed the point of Mean Girls and they started keeping a burn book. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yes.
But there was like all the mean chants, the you're going to pump our gas someday. They would just like scream at you in the playground for no reason.
No.
You'd be like, you guys suck. So I just sort of associated it with girls who suck.
Okay. I understand.
And so I watched it for the first time, like properly with like both eyes on the screen, not walking in and out of a room that it was on in last night. And I was like, oh my God, it's a film like about integrity and sportsmanship and creativity and learning how to be a leader, learning how to be a teammate, all these amazing things, and also about teenage girls.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when is there a teenage girl movie about the concept of integrity?
100%. Like, there are some really fantastic lines in it, and I think that's why the following six movies, which exist in the same universe in the sense that they exist on planet Earth, but otherwise there's no characters follow on, like no plot is the same. They're simply of the Bring It On universe. Why they're sort of so gross to watch is because they are about nothing. They are about like a bit about... One of them's got Rihanna in it. Like, you know, they're about cheerleading. They're like, maybe we do this illegal stunt. Sometimes they're about like two competitive teams coming together, but they aren't about this like solid base of humanity, which is in Bring It On, the OG. Because this one has some amazing lines in it. Like, so right at the, you know, so when they're, so the Clovers can't go to nationals because they can't afford to it. And the team are celebrating, the Toros are celebrating because they're like, great, they aren't going. Therefore, ergo, we win.
Yeah.
And Torrance Shipman, Kirsten Dunst, says, I consider being the best to going out there and beating the best. Mm. And so it's empty. It'd be a hollow victory to win if they aren't there.
Yes.
And so she believes very firmly that like they should go so that she can beat them, you know, that. And then at the end, a spoiler here, but the Clovers win at Nationals when it's between, and the commentator is like, and it was between these two teams and this was really tough. So you're like, who's it going to be? And the Toros come second. And so you look to Kirsten Dunst to be like, what should we feel? And actually, it's not her line. It's one of the mean cheerleaders who sort of sat on a boy's shoulders who's like, guys, second place! You know, yeah. And it's like, oh my God, fuck, yeah, second place. Like, that's amazing. We made it all the way to nationals. We overcame all these things. We
learned to be
up.
A team. We made our own, like, choreography for the first time.
We got screwed over and we thought we couldn't do it. And now here we are and we all gave our heart and soul and we came second and that's amazing.
Because it's about the transfer. It's about, like... the two kind of main characters that we're following is Missy, who's the Eliza Dushku character. Mm-hmm. I think it's just an enormous lesbian awakening for many, many girls out there.
Holy fuck.
Holy fuck.
When she goes, my school had no gymnastic squad. This is a last resort. I wish to be what I want from you. Los Angeles. Then she takes her keys off her belt sort of throws them on a table in a way that I found very confusing and overwhelming. I was like, God, that's hot. God,
everything she does is so fucking hot. And their chemistry is like, when are you gonna kiss?
Yeah, please kiss.
When are you gonna?
Don't like, kiss the brother.
The brother who I find very cute, but is still just like, what is the closest male actor that we can find that is basically like a like tracing paper over Eliza Dushku that we can just make the hair short? Because you know culture wasn't ready.
No, it wasn't.
But it would be now. So you're following. Missy and Torrance, they all have improbable names.
Insane.
And like Gabrielle Union's character is called Isis.
No.
Yeah.
That's insane.
But we'll get to her. So you're mostly following those two girls, and it's great. It's this great writing, great story arc planning because it's Torrance learning how to be a leader and it's Missy learning how to be on a team and the sort of the love you can build by being a part of something. And she's a very cynical character who holds herself apart from everything, and actually it's about that beautiful feeling when you overcome your sort of urge to be ironic and sarcastic and the whole thing is apart from you, and to just commit to the bit.
Yeah.
And when she commits to the bit of being a cheerleader, she just is so happy.
Yeah.
But she's still herself.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
And then you got Kirsten Dunst like learning how to be a leader, but it's also about the whole team learning how to be a whole team.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they like how to make decisions as a team, how to like choreograph, how to, you know, learning what they think is right. You know, it's just so important.
It's oh my God, it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. And I think that's why it stands the test of time, is because it sat on a... I have this theory about storytelling that's like, you gotta have a story. Every story is like a pizza, and you've got this very boring dough that is going to be about something in profound, like grief or a man getting his wife back or integrity or loyalty, all of these things. If you serve just that in a restaurant, everyone will be like, ugh,
yeah,
this is horrible. And then on top of that, you have to put the cheese and tomato and the sweet corn or whatever you like on your pizza, which is like character and bits and flash. And I think the cheese in this is there's cheerleading and amazing routines and glitter and girls are jumping in the air and short skirts and very, very white shoes and like all this stuff. You're like, I want to be part of it. And I think how the other ones suffer is that they're simply cheese and ham.
Just
and you're like, you can't eat that. You can't do that for an hour and a half.
It's all slopping around.
Yeah, it's nothing.
You can't come together.
And it's not
burnt
enough.
Burnt your lip.
Yeah, you burnt your lip and you feel sick. And like, and it's like, that's, it's not, and I guess with the other ones, they were just like, I don't know, girls just like cheerleading, just do that. It's like, that's not enough. It's not enough just to have a skirt and a thing and do a show and go.
It's so, in a way that's very different to the teen movies of the time, which I know everyone loves. Like, we all love 10 Things I Hate About You. We all love these movies, or Clueless or whatever. It's really about things, you know? Like, it is about things. It is a film about cultural appropriation.
Oh.
Before that term was, like, in use.
Well, yeah, before that was a thing. We don't ever say the word race. We don't say the word cultural appropriation. Yeah. We use the phrase, like, it's not cheating, it's winning. And things like that, that we, while discussing something massive, you know, and really racial and really huge, and the idea that, like, can you just take things? And I think you see it to sort of with I see it a lot with the girl that Jimmy, I don't have any of the correct names here, but a TikTok star, Jimmy Fallon, let on Jimmy Fallon to do a series of TikTok routines.
Oh, right.
The sort of 10-second, you know, the bits.
Dancing bits.
The dance bits.
Yeah.
And he was sort of holding up a sign and it was the name of the dance. I don't know. I couldn't tell you what any of them are.
Okay.
I don't follow the dance culture on TikTok. But what I did follow was when that video went viral. I mean, she is a very attractive, thin, white girl in high-waisted jeans who's just like doing the dances in this like very empty way. She's hitting her moves. She's doing it on the count. And she's very famous. But none of them are hers. And there was this huge like thread of people. Again, I don't know any of these players, but I was really listening to the discourse that was like, you didn't invent any of these dances. Yeah. And then people were putting up like side-by-side videos of her doing them and the original people. And largely the original people weren't white. And so obviously there's like an element of that there. But mostly they were just done with like so much passion and soul and spirit, and that's completely lacking in this like empty-headed, like vapid, thin girl on Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, that's like, it's such a, it's so interesting because like cultural appropriation would then go on to become this incredibly huge conversation that I think all creators are asking themselves, right? And all people who absorb art are asking themselves about. And it's this very elastic thing.
I'm sorry, I'm so bad.
Just kicking and whacking things.
It's this very elastic thing.
It's this very elastic argument. And like, I think young people, particularly online, they love to point it out kind of thing, which I get when you sort of are given some tools as a young person to like identify things, you then go around labeling things kind of thing, and I think they'll just see someone that they'll that doing something and they're like, ah, cultural appropriation or whatever, and
I got one
I caught them all. And I think the nuance that is sometimes lost of the essence of cultural appropriation, not that I'm an expert, is that you are taking something from someone and you are getting famous off it. You are making the money out of it. You are producing capital and taking it from someone who is not getting any, And that is exactly the thing that you see here. This is not girls dancing in their back gardens. Like, that would be a different thing, you know what I mean? Or dancing for each other, or having seen a routine and then copying it for fun. These are people who are like getting scholarships. They are getting huge trophies. They are getting money. They are getting resource. They are getting kind of a local fame. Stealing, you know?
Yeah.
And they're disgusted by it. But there's this thing, there's this conversation she has with her boyfriend early on, where he's like, everyone does it. Everyone does it. You know, it's fine. And like that, and it's this interesting thing of like, that probably is the way he's thinking about it. Like, yeah, we're all competing. We're all a thing. We're all going to the same competitions and things and whatever. We're all seeing stuff, which is how creatives work. Like, you're a comedian. You might, you know, without even realizing, see Nish Kumar do a joke or whatever, and the intonation might be very inspiring to you, and you'll pick that up and whatever. And so that's what he's talking about. But what she's like, no, we're taking this from people who don't have a platform. The playing field is not level in any way. And that's actually a thing she says to her dad when she's begging him for his company to sponsor the Clovers, where she's like, come on, dad, level playing field and all that. So she, you can tell, it's so clever writing. She's like parroting a rhetoric back to him that she's obviously heard, but we, the audience, haven't, you know?
100%. It's sort of an amazing piece of work. And I think like if it was written today, it would be way on the nose.
Yeah.
And it would just come out and like boldly say its opinions.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it would have them. And
but it's subtler because it was a subtler conversation at the time, because it wasn't a conversation that everybody was having.
You're so right. You're so right. It wasn't as massive. The Jessica Bendinger, who is the writer, is a former journalist and music video director who originally pitched the idea of the film as called it Cheer Fever. And she pitched it as Clueless meets Strictly Ballroom, set at the National High School Cheerleading Championships, because she herself was obsessed with watching cheerleading competitions on ESPN. Gorgeous. The film's themes were informed by Bendinger's experience as a white writer covering hip-hop artists at music magazine Spin, a predominantly white publication. And she said, having seen white kids emulating hip-hop moves at those cheer competitions, I thought, well, what if? And I started asking questions until I got to, what if the best team in the country has been stealing their routines? And what if that squad can finally show up and compete for their crown? And then this is something to... keep in your back pocket next time you get rejected from anything. The pitch was passed over 28 times.
28 times.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous. But I think it's very interesting that it was obviously something that she was very profoundly experiencing and
witnessing, really, as an onlooker, you know?
And also obviously feeling herself of being like, I'm a white journalist in this privileged position at a largely white magazine, but what we're talking about and what we're making capital on is not of our own creation, and yet we're the ones making money.
Oh. And it's a movie with Kirsten Dunst about cheerleading,
right? It's amazing.
And on top of all that, and like you said, that's the dough. But also just the way it's fucking shot, man.
It's slick as shit. Like it's really good. It's also like it's absolutely classic storytelling of like the presenting of the quest, the rejection of it, the crossing the threshold. You know, you're hitting all those beats. You're moving at real speed, and each scene like does its job of being like, we move the plot forward, but it's also like funny or amazing or romantic or does its job in, you know, there's no wheat on that bone, as we famously say. There's no fat on that steak. I don't know what the phrase is.
No fat on the bone?
No fat on that bone. Yeah. You know, like we're going.
So we're going. It's work. And like, especially it really, like it's, dance is like those things are so hard to shoot. Like I think with those, and what's interesting as well is looking at Bring It On in a post cheer world, which is, I mean, the Netflix documentary that came out a couple of years ago that it was, I think it happened right as the pandemic was settling in, so like everybody was watching it, and everyone kind of got, even if they'd never seen Bring It On, they got to grips very quickly with the fact that, oh, these are professional athletes. This is the combination of dance and gymnastics. This is clearly very difficult. There are people like having very real injuries on this. You know, this is like any other sport. And so like watching Bring It On in a post-cheer world where we already accept that this is an athletic sport. And then you watch Bring It On explain that to you, that it really is a sport. And this is a sports movie with all the same underdog, overdog sort of journeys in it. But what you learn watching Cheer is that like those sequences, especially when they're doing the big competitive dances, so hard to shoot because there's so much going on.
You
have to like train the watcher, the viewer, where their eye should go, you know?
Completely. And even if you have watched Cheer, by the time they do get to Daytona, watching that routine on the mat is actually quite hard to watch because it's only one static angle.
Yeah.
And you're like, and then when you, and so, and you know, and now we're going to sort of open a door here into the revelation that I'm also a competitive cheerleader. But when you actually see a routine with your own eyes, you're like, that was very boring. That was, and quite hard to watch, truth be told.
Okay.
Whereas when you watch Cheer do amazingly in the run-up to it, and what Bring It On similarly did, is have all these incredible camera angles, particularly one in the air. So when they're doing their basket toss, which when they're throwing that tiny girl very, very high, she's like rotating in slow motion, like right at the, she's hitting her mark, like just in front. It's really impressive, like technically impressive what they've done. And to make you feel not as though you're watching, but as though you're like part of the routine. Like you're in it, you're on the mat with them, you're doing it. Whereas like I think if you watch when you get to Daytona in Cheer, this is the time where now the cameras, the documentary crew no longer have access to the cameras, so they're having to work with what the ESPN what the static cameras that are already there, and you lose and you see then how much work they've done in the rehearsal to make it look as amazing as it does, which it is amazing, but it's just hard to, it's hard to shoot.
So we have to,
and now
we shuffle into the corridor.
I've opened the door and we'll shuffle in.
Is a competitive cheerleader.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, listening to your voice, I imagine will confuse a lot of people, because I don't think most people think there is cheerleading in England.
Oh, let me tell you. Okay, so, and again, a thing also I didn't think. So I may sort of bring it on like an aspect of my personality sort of in the final year of school, and then went away to...
But you grew up in like the countryside, so this has always confused me.
Yeah, you grew up
in like the horse countryside.
That's correct.
And so you got into your final year of school with who?
Myself. Like, I just was like into it.
Okay. So you were watching it on TV?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you have the internet by this point, so you can seek the stuff out.
No. I wasn't watching anyone else doing it. Like, I was just... Well, I was watching Bring It On.
Okay.
And the Bring It On again, Bring It On, Fight to the Finish, Bring It On, Cheer, Smackdown. You know, I was just... Uh-huh. I was just involved in the culture. And then this is also a similar time that Heroes comes out, the TV show Heroes.
Oh, Hayden Panettiere.
Hayden Panettiere, who actually... Panettiere. Hayden...
Hayden Panacotta.
Panacotta Panettone is... and amazingly, she is in Bring It On, All or Nothing.
Oh, yes. I remember the box art. Yes.
Yeah. So she is the captain in Bring It On, All or Nothing. And one of her teammates, both of them, in basically their costume from Bring It On, All or Nothing, are cast, both of them, very short amount of time later in Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
In sort of insanely.
That's very mad.
It's a real odd decision to take two of them off the team and to have this uniform, this red and white uniform that is basically identical. Anyway, so she's in Heroes. So then again, back the, you know, Save the Cheerleaders, Save the World became back to the forefront. This is all in my final year. And I'm not doing anything with it apart from just everybody knows I liked it. And so I leave school and I have a year before I go to university, and I spend a bit of that time in Canada, and which is where my dad is from. And I was living with my auntie in Vancouver, and my uncle had season tickets to the... I'm going to get them wrong, but I think they're called the BC Lions. I'm sorry if you're a fan who are a football team. But what the BC Lions had was a cheerleading team. And when they came, so we went to watch, and when they came out on the pitch for the first time, this is the first time I've ever seen cheerleading in real life, I lost my goddamn mind. And then I...
Were they good?
I don't remember. They were just hot, I think. They
hot were and hot. Together.
And hot and together and sparkly and shiny and smiling. And I just wanted to be... I wanted to be part of it. And then this is when we take a turn to be like, sorry? Is I go and work in a ski resort, and I tell people... Sorry. I just was a fucking idiot. I was 19. I tell people I was a dancer with the BC Lionesses. I say that out loud.
That's so sweet.
I know. It's
that's
insane.
So sweet.
This is a sort of pre-internet time, which like...
Yeah.
Because if you said that now, it would take someone 2 seconds to be like...
What are you, 18, 19?
I'm 18 years old.
That is peak liar phase.
Liar. You're just saying any old... And then I meet... In fact, she's Irish. And I meet this fantastic girl called Cleena, who was so wonderful. And she just saw through my bullshit immediately. And she was like, no, you're fucking not. No, you're not. And I was like, yes, I was. Because when other people ask me questions about it, I just made up this whole life, all this thing I'd done. She was like, that's not true.
You're lying.
You're lying. And then
spoof.
And then she sort of grilled me on it for a bit until I was like, yeah, I am lying.
I'm a damn dirty liar.
I'm a dirty liar. She was like, I love it. And we became like great friends.
Are you still friends with her?
I wasn't. Yeah, like only in like Facebook sense, but I sort of keep up with what she's doing a little bit.
Cleena, we wish you well.
Oh, Cleena, I wish you so well, and I really would like to hang out again. I like, oh God, she was so fantastic, and she really took me under her wing, and she was a little bit older than me, and it was a really formative time for me, because she really sort of smacked the bullshit out of me, of being like, you've got plenty going on, you don't need to be just saying things like you're in the BC Lionesses. Aww. She's like, just stop this. Anyway, she was so fantastic. So anyway, I'm still reeling from my BC Lionesses experience. I'm in Canada, and I go to university for the first time, and I'm still set in the clear information that like cheerleading exists in America and nowhere else. And I get to university, and I get to the Freshers' Fair.
And where are you going to university now?
Durham. Durham. Oh God, I had a nice time. I get to the Freshers' Fair. there's a cheerleading team.
Oh my God.
And I just couldn't believe it. And people are avoiding the table like the plague.
So what do they look like? What does it set me, like, paint the picture for me. They have like branded jackets on.
Oh, sorry. I saw what they're physically wearing. They're in their uniforms, which is a white, very tight white polo neck. Mm-hmm. And then a crossed silver and purple crop top affair. Mm-hmm. So the sleeves are out, but you've got your white polo neck underneath.
Yeah.
And then a high-waisted purple skirt that's in pleats with a silver trim on it.
Elegant.
Really elegant. But the skirt, it looks like you're almost in a dress because the two pieces elegantly fit together and they meet and they're very elegant and they're in bright white socks and bright white shoes.
And what are they called?
The Durham Divas.
Yes. Yeah. I would like to be a Durham Diva.
Yes. It's also what I whisper. I'm like, yes.
And so you are pulled by magnets.
I'm pulled by magnets to be like, please,
please, accept
please.
Me.
I go to the tryouts and they swiftly identify that I can't move or dance or certainly can't cartwheel. I can't do any of the things. And I remember going home and kicking myself. And I was
all these years you're watching Bring It On, you never thought going to a dance class?
I should
or
be training,
class,
obviously.
Or...
Yeah, this is the voices in my head. But the time I was like, I didn't think it would ever actually happen.
Right. So how could you know?
How could I know this was going to happen? Why didn't I spend all this time training? To which you might say, well, you obviously don't actually like gymnastics or dance enough to have pursued it in any way. Which I would say, touche. And also, I'm not very good.
But you got on the team.
So I don't make the team.
Okay.
But I join the junior team, the secondary team. And I go to one practice and I'm like, I'm not doing this again. This is ridiculous. I'm not being on the sub squad for the cheerleading. But I remain on the email chain.
Okay.
And come the beginning of the end of the Easter holidays, or our second term now, I'm a fresher, it's my second term, and we get this email that's like, basically all the third years get to sort of Easter term and realise they've just done cheerleading for 3 years and have forgotten to in any way practice for their exams. And so they all quit the team. So there's like been a dearth of people leaving. And they say, then the email goes out to the people on this email chain of the junior squad.
Yeah.
Of which I have been a silent observer for many months now.
Right, right.
Auditions will be at this time, come along to training. And I've now made friends with a girl who is on the squad.
Right.
And so I say, please can I come? I'm going to come along to the audition. And we've been like rehearsing like mad. She's been teaching me. We've been practicing. She's quickly identified. I can't really do anything, but we can do some of the arms and the stuff. And we're like trying to do it. And she's like, okay, what can you do? I remember her being like, can you do a standing back tuck? And me being like, yeah. And then she was like, go on then. And I was like, oh, okay. You can't just.
Oh,
I see.
You can't just keep lying.
You can't just keep saying things. But I was slightly more agile than I am now. And I could have like given the splits a go and I could do a bit. You know, but it wasn't good. Anyway, we get along to it. I've been training for a week. We get along to the day and the captain comes up to me and then someone was like, this is Tessa. She's here to try out for the team to be a replacement. And I was like, yes, just wherever you'd like me to go, I'll do it. No, I'd love to show you what I can do. And she was like, are you free on April the 4th? And I was like, yep. And then she was like, great, you're on the team. Go and stand over there. And I was like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
And I remember calling my mum and being like, whatever we're doing on April 4th, I'm not doing it. I've got to go to Birmingham to nationals. And so then I make the team. And then once I was in it, again, they've clearly identified that I can't do it and I'm nothing but a detriment to the team.
Oh, but by this point, you are spirit.
I got so much spirit and I want it so badly, but that is not enough. But these girls are just too nice to kick me out. And they're like, okay, she can stay.
A rare narrative you hear about cheerleaders.
Yeah, I guess so. They just like couldn't. I think they had subtly suggested it to me several times and I hadn't taken the hint. So they just let me come back. I just think they thought I would go on my own accord, but I was like, I love it too much. So second year I come back and...
Are you doing any gymnastics or dance training?
No, I'm going to training twice a week, but otherwise I'm not doing anything outside of that.
My brain keeps wanting to shape this into like, and then at night she stretches and goes on the balance beam and she rents out a big gymnastic hall and she trains herself and a beautiful boy from the wrong side of the tracks comes in and helps you, but none of that is happening because life is not a movie.
None of that is happening yet, but okay. Hold your horses. So the captain does not like me. Understandably, I am bringing her team down.
You're a detriment to the team.
She keeps being like, who can do a round off? And I say yes. And then she's like, right. And then I sort of do a round off and she's like, okay, that's not a round off. Like, you know, they're all just like, what is this girl doing here? Why is she so bad? But we can't get rid of her. Anyway, there's 25 people on a team, of which you would compete at regionals and then nationals 3 times a year. We don't have Daytona in the same way in the UK, but we do have a cheerleading association, of which you'd be surprised to see that most universities have a competitive cheerleading team. So you have 25 people made up of 5 separate stunt groups. Mm-hmm. So your stunt group would be your front base, your back base, your side, and your flyer. There's your 5. Of which I was a back base by sheer virtue of being very tall. Mm-hmm. And there's several people she doesn't like in the team, me most of all, and she puts us right at the back. Like, we're back of the formation, where she makes this new squad, 5 of us, puts us right at the back. We're barely visible. We're hopeless. It's me, 2 girls she doesn't like, this new girl, and then our new girl, who's an incredibly amazing gymnast, but very, very shy. And again, it's completely, your school has no gymnastic team. This is a last resort. She doesn't really want to be part of a team, but she is here. Mm-hmm. And she's so scared. And every time we have to go in the air, and going in the air is really high and very tricky to do, she cries. And she's so overwhelmed and upset. And then, you know, our captain is just like, oh, Jesus Christ, this team is a disaster.
This poor girl is really going through it, this captain.
She's really going through it. And she's like, Christ, they're hopeless. And I remember one time she really like snapped at us to be like, oh, of course they can't do it. Like, really. So then the 5 of us, we start practicing.
The training
montage begins. Yes. We start renting out the hall. We start we get the sprung floor gymnastic mat. We go in, like, we start doing it like late at night, like after everyone's finished. We go in like really late at night, just the 5 of us, and we start doing it. And we train, her name was Emily, the amazing gymnast, and we train her up. And so she gets more and more confident. And I get better and better. And I work out the counts, because the counts are 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But I remember the first time when they were like, and now lead the count. And I remember being like, 1 and 2 and 3 and 4.
Mr. Steps.
And I'm like, the fuck are you? So you're starting with 5. So I learned to count. I learned to get my rhythm correct. They teach me like where I'm going wrong in all the dance things. I'm constantly going backwards. We teach each other to like to do it. And then we don't like show what we can do. It like takes us months to like get good. And then we learn how to do this like extra amazing stunt move. And the whole team, the captain's like, who taught you to do that? And we're just like, we just worked out how to do it.
Oh.
And then we secretly, so now she's furious.
You should really be pitching this, by the way. You should really be pitching this movie.
Our amazing like shy flyer is like, you know, at the top of the bar, because it's so high how have to you go. And then somebody, I remember saying to her, somebody said, I overheard, oh God, somebody said to her, how are you so confident going that high? And she didn't know I could hear her. And she said, because I know Tessa will catch me. Like, and it was like, oh, this, I can't move and I can't dance, but I'm going to catch you. Like, I will get you no matter what. And what we had was this like intense trust that was like, we're going up and you're coming down safely and I'm going to get you. And so that's what we got, like, so good at stunting, which is the flipping bit, the throwing bit. And then on our final thing in our third year, when it was the final thing that year, when we go to nationals, so there's the competition, the main competition, and there's all these various different age groups and everything, but there's also something called stunt group, and it's just the 5 of you, and you go out and you do dance is incorporated, but it's just the 5 of you doing a stunts on and off, continuously for 2.5 minutes. And you get more points how many flyers you can get involved. Like, so if all 5 of you can go in the air, like, that's extra points. If you can do like this particular move, that's extra points. And we secretly enter, and we don't tell the captain we're going to do it. And we enter, and we'd worked out this cannon formation, because I was so off my count every time with the dance that we realized that if we just put me in the back, it would look like I was just doing it at a different beat on purpose, as opposed to the fact that I couldn't do it. Oh. And we do this routine, and we win. And we win.
Tessa!
And we win.
I've known you for 10 years and I've never heard this story.
I don't ever really talk about cheerleading. I think it's because it was like, it's so shameful, but it's like, it was such a pure part of my university experience. And like, these girls, like, we like had such an intense and pure, and like, we laughed so much. I think it's because we were all, it was a real underdog thing for the 5 of us. And we win. We win at nationals.
Oh my God. You have to pitch that. You have to pitch. No one's ever done a British cheerleading story before. And Florence Pugh, I'm sure, is available. So,
is she British?
Yeah.
Oh, she's doing a stonking American accent, isn't
she's,
she?
She's doing a great job.
I mean, good for her.
I'm really pleased for her.
Florence Pugh, absolutely. I think that is the, that's the body of a gymnast.
Yeah. Whenever I see her, she looks like she should be being thrown into the air.
Absolutely. She's tight. She's pulling up. She's doing it.
Back to Bring It On.
Please.
But like, that was a valuable and relevant segue. Because I see you in a hole. I can't believe you guys all grinded together in one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I love that.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
I want to talk about because we didn't touch on her very much. And in fact, you don't see her that much in the film. But you feel her always. Gabrielle Union's character.
Okay.
Which is Isis.
Mm-hmm.
She is like if the Statue of Liberty were a person. Like, she's just... It's like she doesn't have... Like, when you see her moving, it's like she's just a floating, and but she's so beautiful, and she's just so full of just integrity. Mm-hmm. And I know I keep using that word, and nobility, and she's just like, there's something about that presence on screen. And I think part of it is that she was actually older than most of the other actors.
Yeah, she's like 30.
Yeah, she's like 27, and yeah, the rest of them are the ages they're supposed mm-hmm. to be, really. And like, I just think it is one of the best mm-hmm. performances in the teen movie canon, because like, she's not scary, but you are afraid of her.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But also you would follow her into hell. Like,
you would follow her into hell.
You'd do anything she asked of you. Like, yeah, you want her. She embodies what it was to be a captain.
Yes.
Of being like, she's leading this team. And I guess that meeting her is the first time that Torrance is like, okay, that's what a captain is.
Yeah. Because that's it. She doesn't have any... Torrance has no role models. Because Big Red is a false role model. Her boyfriend's a false role model. They're all just corrupted by this constant hunger to win and winning at all costs.
That's so wise. A false role model? That's exact... Oh, my God.
Are you identifying all your false role models?
Maybe. So, tell me some more things. Tell me more.
Yeah. And like, she... Like, there's no... It's like... There's this, actually, it reminds me a lot of, I don't know if you ever watched Drag Race.
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
Enough, I hope, to keep up there's, with this conversation.
There is an All-Stars segment of the competition mm-hmm. where like all of the former contestants come back, and it's supposed to be like the best of the best. But the twist with All-Stars is that you vote out your fellow competition. I mean, you vote them out. If you win the challenge that week, you then get to decide who goes home.
No.
So it's a real survivor element, and like you choose between the two bottom performers that week, and obviously it gets very heated because it's like, well, I've been doing really well all along, and I just stumbled this week, and so is basically the donkey. Like, is like, people keep her in because they know she's not competition. It's very exciting.
Stop.
And every week, whenever that, and basically it's that, like every week or every other week, it's like somebody who's great competition, and they always say the same thing to the person who has the power that week, which is like, well, do you want to beat the best? Do you want to win? Do you want to really win? Do you want to beat the best kind of thing? And I find that like, it's just a very exciting concept, and it comes to this brilliant... It's such brilliant writing, and it's all done so quickly and with very few minutes donated to Screen or lines of dialogue dedicated to it, which is they find out that the Clovers can't go to Daytona because they don't have the money. And again, a subtler conversation because not many people were having it at the time. There's no like big explainer of like, well, Compton is a blah, blah, blah. And like they can't do, you know, it's like,
yeah,
we all just get it.
We get it. Yep.
We do get it. And it trusts the teenage audience to also just get it.
Yeah.
And it also puts a new kind of relevance on chants like, that's all right, that's okay, you're going to pump our gas one day.
Oh my goodness, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like these are the richest children in the country, yeah. You know? And so she says, you know, to the team, you know, it's not real winning if we're not being the best. She goes to her father, she gets his company to sponsor them, and then she goes with the check to the Clovers, where they are writing a letter to like a local talk show host called Pauletta, who I love.
Pauletta.
And it's the best, like, it's like, you know how Judi Dench wins Best Supporting Actor for the Queen Elizabeth I role in Shakespeare in Love? It's like, that's the Best Supporting Actor moment. It's like 3 minutes of screen time and I believe Pauletta's reach.
Oh, absolutely. To the point I was like, I wonder if Pauletta is a real...
Yeah, I assumed it was like a fake thing, but like, but maybe...
No, no, it's not.
It's not.
It is fake, but... It makes you be like, oh, that must be a real person. Just, you know, you believe her 100%.
You believe her 100% and you believe the existence of the world and there being a wish day and stuff. And
yeah, you believe it to the point that I was like, that's a real show.
Yeah, that's a real show. And also that happened.
Yeah.
It's like...
That's a real show and that's the thing, that happened. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's and then... Yeah, so they're drafting this letter all together as a team. I just love seeing that team together. And I wish we knew them better. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, the small one. I love the small one so badly. The one who really wants to fight everyone.
Yeah.
I thought she was amazing.
I'm amazed. Like, with all the sequels they made, they just didn't do the same, the Clovers actors.
Yes.
Why not?
That's the thing. And I truly, sometimes late at night, I do think about writing to Beacon Pictures to be like, you've set the bar so fucking low. Can I submit a Bring It On? Because these are dreadful. Whereas like the world was there for you. There's so much you could have done.
The world was there.
Yeah.
But then it's weird because like you and I specifically are white viewers like watching it and we're following Torrance the whole way, so we're like, oh, she's doing the right thing, she's doing and she's done the right thing, and this is about the pursuance of the right thing. And then Gabrielle Union, Isis, just rejects it, and you're like, she's like, and it's basically it's the film saying to the audience, this is not a white savior film. And it's so because you don't actually see it coming. I didn't see it coming at all.
No, absolutely not. I was like, there's not even any discussion with the team. There's no element of like, just take the money. Like, there's no, it's like, absolutely not. That is not what it means to be a leader.
Ugh.
And it's, and then when she says,
you do not take charity from your competition. It's like, to soothe their conscience
when she's like, oh, so you can sleep better at night, like, so that your white guilt is better. Like, it's like, no, I'm gonna go. And then she does the whole Bring It line.
Like, but more the title, like, it's become like almost a thing. It's like, yeah, Bring It On, you know, Bring It On kind of thing. But then when she actually says it, it's like, just don't go easy on us because you feel sorry for us or because you feel guilty that you stole from us. Like, when you better bring it.
Yeah, you better bring it. My God. And then it's a line that's pastiched over and over again. Like, oh, it has been but rotten and whatever. But like at the time, I think, it hadn't been done before. It didn't feel a pastiche. It felt as powerful as it was intended.
Yeah. It's a powerful film. It's just like I love this genre of movie, but there is kind of no doubt really that the majority of them, even like, something that has a lot of like feminist overtones, like 10 Things I Hate About You. I'm saying that 10 Things I Hate About You a lot because people request that. That's the other big teen movie that's always requested on this podcast.
That you've never done?
That I'm just not that interested in it.
I understand.
I guess I don't want to fake it for people.
I understand.
You know, like I just don't care that much.
I respect you.
Thank you. it's got a lot of feminist overtones, but it is essentially about, it's a love story. They're all love stories. And it's just like kind of alarming to watch something that has a love story in it. It's a subplot, but in the same way that like The Devil Wears Prada has a romance subplot, it is about teenage girls experiencing creativity, integrity, teammanship, like loyalty towards one another. And there's just not values that are celebrated for teen girls in their movies. Not then, anyway.
Not then. I don't think now. Like, I don't know if we're doing them. I worry that, like, there's just such an incredible we were very lucky to have this like huge bank of teenage movies when we ourselves were teenagers, that I'm not sure, and maybe that's just because we're not teenagers right now, so we're not as finger on the pulse as what's coming out. But like, it felt like the teenage experience was being writ large by Hollywood for us to consume in a way that I don't know if it is now. And if it is, it's being done by people who went through that and so are writing about a sort of different experience.
It's so upsetting. And this is more like a comment on teenage movies at that time anyway, that were where everyone was played by people who look like Kirsten Dunst. It's like, you really get this sense, because you were just like this horrible, claggy creature in a school uniform. Mm. And they were just so impossibly beautiful. And every time you looked at them, you felt like you were somehow failing as being a teenage girl in some way. Which maybe was part of the reason why I didn't come to this as a young person, but that I really like it now. Because it can't hurt me anymore.
Oh, gosh. Gosh.
Gosh.
I can, yeah, okay, okay. What, everyone was so beautiful in it, you couldn't, it wasn't, you didn't feel like you were welcome on the team.
Yeah, maybe that was it.
Mm.
But now I understand it's about everyone being on the team.
That's so nice.
The gay stuff is interesting, huh?
Oh, it certainly has some moments where you think, ooh, gosh.
Ooh, gosh.
Ooh, gosh. Let's.
A lot of F-slur has gone around.
Oh, too many of those. In a way that you're like, and it was totally fine, was it, in 2000, just to say it? Just to say that?
Well, the thing is, so the director has defended his use of it.
Okay.
And there are two F-bombs in the movie. The first one is the kind of an interesting sort of subplot. It's not even a plot. It's more just a motif kind of thing of the football players of the school, who are a useless team, constantly bullying the boys who are on the cheerleading team.
Yeah.
And the kind of the irony of it is being like, these boys are the incredible athletes who are winning trophies for their school, whereas the football players, who are homophobic and constantly using the F word, they are totally mediocre, like less than mediocre. And that's kind of a funny, and they sort of torment those guys with it, who are very much our guys and we're on the team with them, you know?
Yeah.
We love them. But, and I think that's just that the director said like, that was like, that I just wanted to be realistic. That's what would happen. And I was like, yeah, fair enough. And then the second is that like, they're all driving to some night game. And Eliza Dushku's character, Missy, is like, do you speak fag?
Yeah. It's, and you think, oh, gosh. What on it?
Gosh. Wow.
Yeah. And it's said with real surprise, where I was like, I thought we'd set up his character clearly that he is a gay gentleman.
Yeah.
And so when she's does, and it's not done meanly, just excitedly, with no... She's not.
Yeah.
She's neither has an opinion on it in neither direction. Problem that she's surprised. But to use that phrase feels wild.
It's wild.
And in that same car journey, the straight one reveals that when he lifts the blonde girl into the air,
he fingers her. Which I don't even know how that works with your arm. Like,
well, they're sat in what they're doing. You're sat. Your bottom would be like on the palm of your hand.
Right.
So he's insinuating that under her Spanx, her cheerleading pants, she hasn't got any underwear on. So then you're like, right, well, that's irrelevant. Like, you've still got... that's... What are you talking about? So then he's sort of... While he's holding her up with one hand, he's going to put his fingers inside her Spanx and into her vagina.
Right.
And he definitely implies that he does that and she...
A lot.
And that she has not clarified that she would like that. You know, like... So it's like, Oh, heavens. Oh, gosh.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's
There is like some flirty, winky eye contact between the two of them. And I do enjoy the idea that like this is their little secret thing.
Yes, I think I think it definitely, when you do see him do it, or it's implied he does it, and when she sort of comes down from the stunt, it's like, hee-hee.
Which...
But even then I'm like...
It's a kind of sexual dynamic I can see a teenage girl getting embroiled in.
Right?
Being like, oh, she doesn't want to talk about it, but it's a thing we do.
But I'm like, that to me feels so written by a man.
Yeah,
of
yeah.
being like, just putting a bit of your finger up their front bottom. That's what that's what ladies like. Whereas I'm like, they don't like that.
They don't like that. This is another thing that leads me on to something else.
Yeah.
They don't like that.
They don't like that.
But what they do like is little secrets.
That you make a fine point. Just a bit of, you're absolutely right. A little bit of touching, a little bit of something.
Yeah,
but I think the implication that like that's a, you're right, maybe it doesn't come across that that's a sexy feeling so much as just like, it's dumb and sexy between them, and it's a little thing that they do.
No, I don't for 1 minute think that it's like physically enjoyable or even happens for very long. I just think it's their little thing.
Okay, I can't.
That's my canon, because I don't want it to be upsetting. I don't want to bring upsetting feelings to bring it on.
You're absolutely right. She definitely is not upset by the experience. No. But I just thought it was an odd thing to be
like. I'm not here to kink shame her, you know?
Yeah. And I think also like people are watching it being like, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Where is your hand in this setup? Anyway, please, what does it bring you on to?
Bring it on. This came out the year after American Pie.
Okay.
And I think you can feel it sometimes. Mm-hmm. And because I think, like, I really don't like those movies. But, like, it's like, teenagers, gross. And it's, like, very, like, South Park-y kind of thing of, like, teenagers are disgusting. Teenagers are hypersexual and weird. And it's all kind of very explicit, like, sexual acts and kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There's, like, an element of that in Bring It On that bumps me out of it. Does it bump you out of
it? Because there is no sexual element.
Because it feels like they had this like great movie about teenage girls and sport and teamwork and integrity and friendship and all this kind of stuff. And then they went back for reshoots, be like, okay, yeah, but we want to make it for everybody. We want to make sure that the boys go see it too. And so like there's like Kirsten Dunst's little brother character who I hate.
I actually think he's very funny.
Really? The bit where he farts on her. That bit I really like. But there's other bits where I'm just a bit like, oh, I don't like this.
For listeners, she's very busy and very stressed trying to be on the phone. He's like, listen, I got to tell you something. And she's like, go away. And he's like, listen, normally I would just be listening on the phone and trying to annoy you, but this is so important. And so you're like, she's like, what? Fine, tell me. And he sort of jumps up on the couch and farts in her face.
That bit is so funny.
It's the pinnacle of humour.
That's true. I hate him in the rest of the film.
Why?
But I just, annoying and horrible and
ugly. But I think he's so real.
You're right, he's so real. But that fart bit is so funny.
I think he's very funny. I like him.
But you know what I mean? There's other like very American Pie moments where they kind of flip to the male characters for a bit. It's very like bro-y and weird. And I just don't know.
Which bits?
And it's like all the bit where like the one of the guys is like stretching out one of the girls' hamstrings.
It's like the
car wash scene as well. It feels like, this isn't for the girl gaze this was meant for. This is very much.
It turns out when you've been like, what about those scenes? I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. It turns out I've repressed them.
Every scene that isn't explicitly about cheerleading.
I'm like, it's just a grey blur. But you're absolutely right. The stretching one is definitely a core moment of them being like, maybe we should join the team. Like, that feels very, yes. And the car wash, even though the characters sort of call it out, in Missy's character is like, I'm making good honest money, making $15 for guys to oogle my goodies. Mm-hmm. You're like, just because you know doesn't mean it isn't in this movie. We're all washing each other under a hose.
That's it.
You're right. It's a 2000 movie, and American Pie was absolutely there, and I guess couldn't be ignored, of like, this is what American teenage movies were about. You make fine points that it has moments of real thorn, of being like, oh god.
And I think maybe because I'm looking, but the thing is, these were movies that were made for very big audiences, and then when like a big streamer makes a very specific little thing that's just supposed to be for me, I don't like it. Generally. I don't generally want it, so maybe I'm just, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah,
maybe I'm just a little bitch.
A little cheer bitch.
A moaning little bitch.
That's another thing. Like, it's got these amazing bits of like, this is not a cheerocracy. This is a cheer-tatorship. Again, to shit on the next six movies. But they sort of were like, that's done with such, it's such a stupid thing to do, and it's done with a lot of heart and class and isn't overdone, you know? That you call something a cheerocracy. Very funny. Whereas the other movies all just do it to such an extent. You just pick words that like can't possibly be it.
That the character seemed like genuinely brain dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, totally.
And it feels like they do sincerely use the word cheerocracy. Whereas I can't think of anything else, but like, you know, this is like, don't make me force a word together. But like, feels like the other ones sort of took what they thought was nice about this movie and like made and did more of it. But you're like, no, you've missed it completely.
I think a film that took a lot of notes from Bring It On is Pitch Perfect.
100%. It's something I was really thinking of when I was rewatching it, of being like, this it really set the mark out of like how you make these movies.
Yeah.
And I think lots of other movies have gone on to try and do a similar thing, which is like, can we take a classic underdog sports movie, add real stakes in, and then can we set it against a thing that's not maybe often done, like cheerleading or a cappella singing or lawn bowls or, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know, that we... a big sort of group sort of start ushering in of being like, let's have this, let's see this world, but this story played out against it. But Pitch Perfect absolutely does largely sort of beat for beat.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
100%.
In a way, I'm like, I don't mind
it. I don't care. I like it.
I don't care at all.
We like formulas for a reason.
And then Pitch Perfect, once again, did they learn from the 7 other Bring It On movies? No, they did not. No. They kept making it and were like, oh, people like this and this and this. I'm like, no, they don't. People like that there was a doughy pizza base and then they enjoyed this cheese, but you can't just have the cheese.
The difference with Pitch Perfect being there was endless sort of like merchandising opportunities because those soundtracks could sell, then they could stream them on Spotify. There was like an endless world for them. One thing we haven't spoken about yet is the it's like there's just so much in this film when they hire the choreographer to come in and there's this,
we haven't even mentioned him
mm-hmm. and then it's like the most hilarious scene. It reminds me of the Mr. Sepp scene in Spice World and introduce the term spirit fingers to the world, which
gorgeous.
I feel like it's still in the lexicon.
Absolutely.
And then they do their, they go to nationals or whatever, and the school just before them
do the routine.
The exact same routine.
That's the thing, you do not see anything coming.
No.
Like you really...
For as formulaic as it is, for it being an underdog story, the beats are all surprising.
Huge surprise. Like that is... And it's masterfully done as well, the reveal of that they've stolen this routine. Mm. Like their music starts while they're on camera to somebody. Like it's like, this is exquisite storytelling.
That, where she's doing an interview about like, yeah, we're really excited to see what the other team do.
And she's already in a panic. You know, and I'm like, no. What's happened? And it doesn't just tell you outright anything. It like lets you have to pick up the pieces of what's gone on, like and that routine being so funny and so that's like so well done, that routine, because it's a big ask as a choreographer, not Sparky Pawlowski within the movie, but whoever did the choreography outside of the movie, to be like, this needs to be something that you can believe a choreographer made up, but it's also very funny without ever being purposefully funny.
Like, yes.
We need to be laughing at them. And it'd be just keep at this side of the line that this team would legitimately have agreed to do it.
Yeah, it's so true. Because there's all these like bonkers little modern dance things of like the dead arms
the
and
dead
all that
arm.
Kind of thing. Yeah, yeah.
The thrust, the bits, the thrusting, and they're giving it their all. Whereas like it could be, if they had gone one step more, it would be like, of course the team would never agree to do that. Like you believe that they did it.
You believe that you would be in a practice room nailing it and be like, wow, we're really breaking through to a new kind of form
this
of like
cool.
expression.
Yeah.
This is cool.
Yeah. That even if you're maybe in your gut, you're like, is this a good routine? You're like, no one would be putting their hand up to be like, this is, no one would have said it. And you believe that no one said, this is bad. You know, because they didn't have enough time, and here it was,
and they've had to raise $2,000.
Yeah, they've raised $2,000, and an adult man has come in and with total confidence
and abused them,
and abused them, and you're like, this is a good routine. So you're like, yeah, okay, it's so well done.
Yeah,
that they're up in that because it's so naff what they've come up with. Like they're in this circle, and then they're going round on the top, like in this sort of robotic way, but without it being like clearly a space homage or something. And then they're also like looking out behind each other, and that's the thing. It's good dance work. What they're doing is good. It's just
it's just so bad.
It's so bad. You know, so the joke isn't that they're bad at it. The joke is, oh, it's lovely. It's really well done.
Everything, and also everything pays for itself, you know, because immediately after that, and they bring on is a great example of a movie, I think, if you're a screenwriter, because almost every scene is doing several things. It's like
100%.
It's like serving several different plot points. Mm-hmm. So there's this thing where Torrance then is talking to like some administrative judge guy or whatever about everything that just went down, and you're only hearing like bits like of the conversation where he goes, obviously, I think the line is something like, obviously we had a profound sense of deja vu watching your routine, da, 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 and there's no precedent for this, and it's just frowned upon, da, da, da. And then meanwhile Missy and her brother are like, she's like, don't go over there, and he's like, I'm gonna go over there, and he's like, Torrance, hey, and she's just like shoots him back the most like horrible, like, don't.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, we go back to the conversation and it rounds off and like, but obviously because you're reigning champions, you have a bid at Daytona anyway.
And that sentence.
And it's like, oh yeah, of course.
That sentence just solves every plot point or concern or everything. It's like, you have automatic guarantee to finals. Yeah. But if you use this routine again. So it like gets you, it means they can have like total disaster. Like absolute crash and burn, but know they can go, that they can go on again. Like as a plot device, as a piece of storytelling, you're like, oh, exquisite, mwah, mwah, mwah.
I know, and it shouldn't be believable, because like to have a character that you've never seen before walk up to the screen and be like, that didn't count actually.
Exactly. You should
feel like looted by that, and you don't.
And you don't, exactly. That's the thing. And when other films have struggled to have that moment of like, we've crashed and burned at regionals in whatever, you know, if it's dodgeball, if it's whatever, it's what is the reason we're now allowed to progress to nationals? And then I think, and some people do it with just both feet out, you know, laughing with the audience, be like, this is obviously absurd.
Yeah.
But anyone who tries to like make it believable, you're like, uh-huh. And often I think people are guilty of trying way too hard to find that reason that they're allowed back in.
Yeah.
Whereas it's just done.
It's just elegant.
Elegant. The whole thing, oh my God, it's elegant. Yeah. And every scene, like, it's so rich. Like, oh my God, it's such a great line when she's like, the thing about the spirit stick and the thing, and she's like, you're not going to Hades. And they're like, look around, we're in Hades. Like, you know, they go to the tournament.
The use of the phrase Hades, like, why would you not say hell?
It's Hades is so much funnier.
It's so much
Goes
funnier.
To Hades. It's so great. There's like so much that, like, never explained. We're moving on and we expect you to keep up. And when we go in there, you truly are looking around and you're like, pause. I want to see every team.
Every
I want to see
team.
Everyone's routine. The girls that are praying, the girls that are doing this.
Oh, and the girl that vomits in her teacher's face.
The
girl
teacher.
With the blood all over her face.
And they're like, let's go find your tooth. You know, like, it's... There are these like amazing lines that are given to, you know, characters we never see again, you know, and it's so fucking rich in a way that a tournament like that would absolutely be. Yeah. And it's moving at this speed that you're like, I want to see everyone. I want to know about every character. I want to know about you guys praying and what's your deal. And, you know,
what's their deal?
Let's go find your tooth. Like, it's so, oh God. It's
and then
so
they
well
just,
done.
And like they had all those people set up and then they just threw it all away.
Mm. Who? Wait.
With the sequels, do you know what I mean?
Oh God,
they
100%.
Had this whole believable world and then they just threw it all away.
Well, I know we're coming to the end, but may I give one final smackdown?
Okay.
One final cheer smack, which is to the Lin-Manuel Miranda musical. So, unbeknownst to the writer of Bring It On, uh-huh, who was then not used for any of the other things, the production company just
really
absolutely, so she's no longer part of any of it.
Wow.
So, and what? I guess
maybe she'd want to be. Maybe
I guess upon her own decision, she was like, this is a story I wanted to tell and I don't see any reason to carry on. But the production company were like, we're going to make these straight to DVDs numbers. Then they owned the production company. There was actually a lawsuit when they sold the rights to the musical because she was not credited.
Yes.
In it. And I think it's just in the same way that it's like Bring It On, All or Nothing, Bring It On, Fight to the Finish, Bring It On, Cheer or Die. This was just Bring It On, : the musical.
Right.
And I think what people didn't realise is it was simply set in the world, the cinematic universe
of
cheerleading and was going to be about any old shit, you know?
Oh, I see.
Because I think what people, certainly when I heard that was a musical by Lin-Manuel Miranda, I was like, I lost my goddamn mind.
Yeah.
And I was seriously considering flying to Broadway to watch it.
Because if you get that right, like to have those sequences with song?
With song. The idea of getting to see in the room, you know?
Yeah.
If I was in charge of that thing, I'd have them coming down the aisle. I'd have like an open with them flipping like down the bits. Like, as I'm sure they do. But like, I wanted to see the Clovers do their routine, the Burr, it's called in here, live. And I would have gone for a week and I would have gone every night. Like, that's how much I wanted it. And then, luckily, I watched a bit of a documentary about it and saw some clips of it. And it was simply a cheerleading musical.
Sort of trading off of the Bring It On.
Trading off of the Bring It On trademark, but not of the original film, in a way that I think is the biggest misstep.
Huge mistake.
Huge misstep, because people don't want that. And I think it's because they got in a row with the writer and she wouldn't allow them, you know. So,
yeah, which is good on her.
Quite rightly,
she
should have been like, no, I want to be... Let me do this, because, oh my God, if they got it right, it would have run I'm telling you, I would have flown to Broadway and gone 7 nights out of a week. Yeah. Like, we wanted to see it so badly.
It's so interesting to me always in culture when people don't know what they have.
Mm.
Because, like, I think you're right. I think whoever owns... So whoever owns the IP now, clearly it's not Jessica Bending, although she owns the original story, I imagine, mm-hmm. but the actual property itself belongs to the production company. You're right. They think that what people fell in love with was the cheerleading.
Mm-hmm.
And so they could just keep on firing that out of a t-shirt cannon and that people would take it. But it's like, no, it's like we loved those characters.
Mm-hmm.
They were very real.
We loved them. And it isn't enough to be like, it's a musical just about cheerleading. We're like... Right, but who?
No.
What is it? What do you mean?
I want Torrance. I want Missy.
I want Isis. I want Missy. I want to see her do her stand out, backhand spring, round off backhand spring, standing back tuck, standing. I want to see it all, you know, on the stage every night.
Every night for a week.
I don't want to see just some weird homage that is, oh, I don't know. Anyway, so it feels like Beacon Productions, please get in touch because I have a lot of opinions for you. And it absolutely does feel like they did not know what it was they were training with. And I think what makes me upset about those six next movies and why I sort of talk about them quite a bit is I think that that production company's handling of what they had speaks to this feeling that like, oh, it's just a cheerleading movie. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, it's nothing. It's silly. It's vapid. It's nonsense. People will watch anything. It's just short skirts and, you know, any old shit. And they want to get to nationals. You're like, that's not it. Like, don't. It feels like it's that's this dismissive, it. Like, oh, it's just stupid. It's a silly little thing that you like. And you're like, it's not.
It's not.
It's not.
Which, like, this is like something that we talked about a lot in the Josie and the Pussycats episode, mm-hmm. which was shares a lot of DNA with Bring It On in that it was a movie for young women, for girls and young women that. The people who were writing it absolutely valued the intellect of the viewership.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, no, 13-year-old girls wanna hear and feel about like appropriation and integrity and racial divides and class consciousness. They actually do want that. They like meat on the bone. Like they want that stuff.
100%.
And it's a similar thing. All this very like complicated satire happens in Josie and the Pussycats, and it's not that isn't intended as a wink, wink, nudge, nudge for the adults watching. That is absolutely for the 13-year-olds. You know.
Yes.
And it's this thing like you like frequently just like marketing things to a person that you don't. Respect.
Mm-hmm.
And that breaks my heart.
Yes.
Like, it really upsets me.
Marketing things to a person you don't respect.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's it. And I think it's also exactly what your podcast is trying to do, to be like, respect.
Yeah, respect it.
Respect it. Don't dismiss everything. People are so much smarter than you give them credit for. And how dare you, the owner, think what you have is this when it's that it's something completely different, and you've misjudged this so wildly because you have so little respect for it and for its viewership and why people love it.
It upsets you. It would upset you,
wouldn't it? Just
anyway. I've loved this.
This has been really magical,
very cathartic,
really nice, really nice. We went in some places I didn't think we were gonna go.
Yeah, we got Kalina in Canada.
Yeah, we talked about Kalina. We talked about loads of stuff. Oh my goodness.
Lying.
Lying. Lying. Coming right. together as a team. The whole thing.
Let's get a bloody drink.
Let's have a drink. Thank you so much for having me letting me talk about my passion. I've been badgering Caroline for years to be allowed to come on and talk about it.
I know, and weirdly, I did put it off because I had this slightly sour, like...
Memory of it,
mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. That I now realise was more about the people who, in my class, in my specific class of girls, rather than the movie itself.
Yes, who took the pieces that were in the incorrect pieces and ran with them.
Yeah.
And you're like, those weren't the pieces?
Those weren't the pieces?
Why are you doing that?
Anyway.
No.
We must go. Tessa Coates, Nobody Panic, a wonderful podcast that you host with Stevie Martin.
I do.
Uh-huh.
My show is at Soho in February, then I'm also going on tour, so maybe I will come to your city.
Okay.
Perhaps.
Where can we find that information?
On my Instagram. At WheatPrayLove. Like wheat, I had short-lived dreams of starting a gluten-free blog. Hello, Sentimental Garbage listeners. It's Tessa from the podcast you've just been enjoying. I have some footnotes to this episode, if I may. I'm very sorry for not including them the first time round. I wrote them all in my notes, and then we got so into talking about it, I forgot everything. So I'm recording this the next day, and I hope you don't mind them being included. I think they're all quite good. So the first one is that the three girls who are the best friends with Gabrielle Union's character, Isis, have this amazing chemistry between them because they were, in fact, in a band. They were a girl group called Black, B-L-A-Q-U-E, which stood for Believing in Life and Achieving a Quest for Unity in Everything. Gorgeous. They were cast in the movie. They'd never acted before, and all of their scenes had to be reshot several times because they delivered all of their lines directly down the camera lens. They were also very young. They were underage, and so they had to have their parents on set with them as legal chaperones. And Gabrielle Union, who, as we discussed, was much older, hung out with their parents. Adorable. So the sort of mother hen energy that she brings across is all completely real. So they were a band, and the smallest one, Janelope, has this amazing line right after we've met the Clovers for the first time, and they're coming outside to say, give us the tape back, and they're about to get into a fight. And she says, can we just beat these Buffies so I can go home? I'm on curfew. And then later she says, you've been touched by an angel, girl. Both of which are in jokes to the fact that Eliza Dushku's character was in Buffy. Oh, mwah. Okay, number two is that they shot the movie over the summer in San Diego, and they also had to go to this very intense 6-week cheer boot camp training where they learned all the routines and they learned to do stunts and everything, and it was a very intense, very punishing schedule. And a lot of the cast were very young and were underage, and a lot of the cast were nearly 30. So there was a clear divide between everyone really got on, everyone was great friends. The characters who play Whitney and Courtney, who are best friends in the show, meet on set, go on to be best friends, and Whitney was maid of honor at Courtney's wedding many years later. They're still great friends. Anyway, so everyone makes friends. Everyone's having this like very fun sort of summer camp experience. Many of the cast are very young, and then the other rest of them are quite old. And one night, after they have put the young ones to bed, so they've been out for a fun barbecue, then they put everybody to bed, Eliza Dushku, Gabrielle Union, and Jesse Bradford, who plays Cliff, the love interest, drove to Tijuana, went out, got fucked up, ended up in getting arrested and ended up in a Mexican jail. And Eliza Dushku had to bail them out. And then they drove back through the night and arrived on set, ready to start filming at 7 a.m. the next morning. Oh, can you imagine? So Eliza Dushku's character was exactly as cool as she comes off in the show. And number three is that on her first day of practice after she's made captain, Torrance, Kirsten Dunst's character, decides that they're going to do a wolf wall in training. And somebody says, what's a wolf wall? And somebody else says, only the hardest pyramid known to cheerleading and mankind. And then Carver's, the character of Carver, falls out of the pyramid. And breaks her leg, which of course becomes the pipe for the movie because then they have to replace her, and in comes Missy, and we set all of the show in motion. Side note, when they're in practice, they're nowhere near doing a wolf wall. They're just in three very easy stunts. There's no way anybody should have fallen out of what that girl falls out of, and there's no way that no one would have caught her. It's outrageous that she breaks her leg falling out of that, and that's not Torrance's fault. That is on her bases. They should have caught her. And she shouldn't have gone face... Anyway, they try and do a wolf wall, and so that becomes her, the thing that she, you know, she breaks a girl's leg, etc. There, as they get to nationals, and they get to Daytona, and they finish the routine, the move that they do right at the very end of the routine is the wolf wall pyramid. They all come together. It is incredibly difficult what it is they do. They do it, but the entire team is involved in the pyramid. So you'll see that one character is just on somebody's shoulders right at the front, and people are just like a very small part of the pyramid that you maybe wouldn't normally have to do. But they've done it in such a way that the final move is everybody coming together, the whole team, after they've put this routine together of everybody's different interests and talents, and they've built it together, and then they make the pyramid, and the pyramid that they do, is the one that she attempted in the beginning. And lo, the hero's journey, they come full circle.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.